Aloha and welcome to Goddess Alchemy and Divine Magic. I am your cosmic guide and host, Charlotte Sivak, transmitting to you from the waterfall capital of the world, which is a bit frozen right now. We've been having so much snow. And so we're transmitting here. And again, we have an amazing lineup show for you. And, you know, it's really incredible about synchronicity. And as we're moving into this beautiful year of 2014, the year of the sovereign soul, it's incredible how all this amazing information is coming and surfacing. So we have such an amazing show for you today lined up. Now, we also have Pita Panos, who is our travel guru, who joins us at every single broadcast where she's showcasing a different fabulous destination for soul travel, sacred sites, vortexes, and exploring magical places worldwide. She's from spiritualquestjourneys.com. And we are so happy, ecstatic, delighted that you joined us today for this yummy, awakening, magical cosmic hour of enjoying the nectar of life as we actualize heaven on earth, experiencing your vastness, expanding the collective consciousness with all the amazing synchronicities, all the while daring you to be the masterpiece that you were created to be. Now, of course, we have to do that little shameless self-promotion plug. We have this exotic hour brought to you by Spiritual Quest Journeys. When you invest in spiritual travel, you always come back richer. And Melissa's Aloe for a healthier, happier you. And of course, myself, charlottesivak.com. So please come and visit us on the site where you can find out all about the services that I offer, including soul readings, soul ignition, quantum healing, psychic readings, holographic journeys, Akashic records, past, present, future. Come and visit us at charlottesivak.com or drop me an email to set up a time for a session. And we also just have a quick few announcements before we move on to our amazing lineup of a show today. And we are going to be doing a tour to Sedona, Beyond the Vortex, February 11th to the 18th. And also Egypt, Divine Alchemy and Magic to Egypt, from April 30th to the 13th, which promises to be just an amazing time and an amazing trip. So we're really looking forward to, you know, breaking through those stargates and really finding and stepping into those other realms of dimensions where we're going to meld everything together, where science and magic become one. That's exactly where we're heading anyway. So today's fantastic wild card lineup show, which, you know, is always multi-layered and multi-dimensional, is planned moment to moment. So we will definitely spark your creativity, infusing all of you with infinite possibilities as we awaken the magical child. So let's dare you all to risk living in divine orgasmic ecstasy. Now, with today's lineup of the show, the way this came together is just incredible. Our guest is Xavier Hayes, who wrote this amazing book called Aliens in Ancient Egypt. And it's really incredible how small this world is, because I had seen his picture through being on my dear friend Rita Louise's show, Just Energy Radio. And I had seen his picture and I thought, oh, this looks really interesting. But it wasn't until I myself had gone to a bookstore here in Canada, which is called Chapters, and the book literally called to me. I was just standing there, you know, minding my own business, and I kept hearing psst, psst. And I thought, who is that? When I turned to look around, this book, Aliens in Ancient Egypt, was sitting on the shelf and literally leaped off the shelf and stood in my arms and would not leave. It was almost like it was glue and I could not pull it. So I thought, okay, this book looks really cool. I have to get it. And I absolutely devoured it. It is such an unbelievable book. And as I was reading it, there was, into the second chapter, Xavier had written about Hakim Aswan, who turns out that his son is going to be his son and his wife Patricia, Joseph and Patricia, are our guides when we go to Egypt in April. And I thought, wow, no wonder this book was jumping at me. But the book is so unbelievable because it covers areas that I myself have always been looking into. And as I went through it, I thought, we have got to get Xavier on the show because this is incredible. And as I looked him up on the website and I saw I was blown away to realize that he had just also been on Rita's show, and I thought, oh, we have to invite him on the show, and we got him. So I'm so happy and so thrilled to invite him on the show. I'll just give you a little bit about him before we bring him on, and we can just ask him about everything because we have so many questions. It's awesome. So you can find out more about him at xavientvision.com. And Xavient Hayes is an alternative history researcher and archivist of ancient manuscripts. He travels the world exploring and documenting his findings on lost civilizations, giants, ancient aliens, and myths of pre, and I love the way this is written, Diluvian world. Xavient is also the co-author of Suppression History of America and the author of Aliens in Ancient Egypt. He also hosts one of the most complete online metaphysical libraries in the world, which link the resources to all major works in the field. And he also lives in beautiful South Beach, Florida. So with no further ado, we want to welcome Xavient. Thank you so much for coming on Goddess Alchemy and Divine Magic. Hello. Aloha.
Hola. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I'm excited. Your excitement is making me excited. So it's going to be a fun show.
Ooh, well, you know, we're living in orgasmic ecstasy over here, divine flow. So, you know, it's the way it's got to be. And isn't, I guess that's the way it used to be from before, right? When the world fell into its the dark ages. This book is mind-blowing. And I have to say, how did you begin? How did it start for you? Did you just wake up one morning and, you know, or did you get visited or?
No, I've always been interested in ancient Egypt as a child, teenager probably, you know, when I was discovering Chariots of the Gods. And there's a show on called In Search Of. I used to watch Leonard Nimoy hosted it. And I was glued. That was like my school. That actual school, I really didn't. You know, I was, when you're reading Chariots of God as a teenager, you're not really kind of interested in history class anymore.
Yeah.
And so to me, school became just not conducive to actually learning. So I just been self-studying, always been interested in this subject. And, you know, I read probably the Book of the Dead, you know, the Egyptian version. My friend who was in college already, he was coming back to visit for like Christmas already, and he had printed a copy of it for me. And I remember reading like the first 15 pages, and it was like, whoa, I had to stop. Because what I noticed first, like the first thing I kind of noticed was the similarities between Osiris and Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of, so instead of, when you read the Bible, you know, they always put Jesus in there. You know, every paragraph basically has the name. So it was something similar, but instead of Jesus, it was Osiris. So I kind of, you know, then I came from like a Rastafarian upbringing as well in the Jamaican culture. So I kind of understood about the Kheber Nagast and how Solomon had a flying chariot. And so I was kind of ready for this stuff. It wasn't as scary as it kind of is when you first start going there, because that's the truth. Once you start learning this type of knowledge that's deemed dangerous just because it's not what everyone else, what the sheeple does, it is kind of scary. But there's always a point where, you know, you say, okay, either I'm gonna stop all this now and just go back to my little, you know, my little world and my shell, or I'm just dive into it, because there's no turning back. Once you like take the red pill, like it's gone. You're down the hole.
Yeah.
So, for me, like, at early age, it was, you know, like I'm taking this and let's do it, and there's no looking back from there. And how this particular book spawned was Dr. Carmen Bolter's magnificent documentary series, The Pyramid Code. Have you seen it?
I've seen parts of it. I haven't had the opportunity to see full of it, but it's definitely on the list now.
Yeah, I think you could probably watch the whole thing on YouTube for free. It was on Netflix for a little while, but I think it's not. I think they removed it. So once I saw that, it kind of showing, you know, her showing stuff you've never seen before, like the big crystal compass and other megalithic stuff that, you know, tourists aren't, you know, they don't show, they don't really talk about. And then her interviews with Hakim, and I knew about Hakim from before because I was, you know, one of my favorite books was The Land of Osiris by Stephen Mailer.
Wow.
So I was totally into this alternative Egyptian Kemetology, you know, these type of things, the Afrocentric version, but that Ivan Dunsterdamal wrote about before the pharaohs. So when I saw Carmen Bolter's series and her Hakim speaking, it really kind of put it together for me to, you know, it basically covered everything except the alien question.
And yeah.
So I got a hold of her and kind of came together and agreed to, you know, write a book about, you know, aliens. Because we were going to, at first, she wasn't sure if she wanted to go there. I guess, you know, they use the term starseed.
Yes.
You know, which is, it's just, to me, it's just another word. It's a safer word for alien, right? Which I'm cool with, whatever, that's fine. But we were starting to look at, you know, what we can talk about, and then Chris Dunn's book came out, The Lost Technologies of Egypt, which a fabulous book that showed all the saw marks, you know, in the stone, like the high chiseled, you know, laser cuttings, like whatever however they used to do it, it wasn't copper. It wasn't copper chisels, because there's just massive granite blocks with perfectly cut marks in it, you know. So basically he covered that base, and it's still important to talk about, of course, but you know, it's pretty much aliens is you know, we got to really kind of look at in a subjective way, in like a scholarly way, you know, this topic. So right. She agreed to you know, to do the book with me, and then we also got Graham Hancock to write the foreword, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is a big deal, and I actually turned down the book. The publisher is on now, Interpositions. They did my first book, The Suppressed History of America, where I talk about Lewis and Clark and giants and, you know, a bunch of cool stuff like pre-Columbian voyages, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I turned down their initial offer, and I took a bigger advance, or we took a bigger advance from New Page, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is another good publisher. And so we got this deal, big deal, and, you know, we're going to write this book, and they give you, like, you know, 5 months or whatever to turn in the draft. So I'm working on it, trying to figure out what to say, right? And during this time, Carmen's only son dies in a car accident.
Oh,
her father
so
dies. She loses her professorship at the university. She stopped, like, they stopped allowing her to speak. Like, her speaking engagements were just kind of, like, drying up. Because word got out that she was going to be talking about aliens, you know, and she has, like, 7 degrees, and she's a big deal. Which was important for her to be involved, because, you know, it adds, like, it makes it credible, right?
Right.
But the problem was she couldn't deal with it all, so she dropped out of the project. And I basically had to pay back more money than I even got to retain the rights, and I had to finish the book. So it was crazy, you know, for me. But thankfully, my first publisher, Inner Traditions, was fantastic. I love them. You know, they saw the value, and they picked it up. And it's funny, too, because when I was doing this book, it's all technology, you know, it's all timing, right? Like, if I would do this book maybe when it was supposed to be done or even earlier, it wouldn't have been the same, because it took this time for, like, Wiki Commons for you to like, people can upload pictures on Wiki Commons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's public domain. So when I was doing the book, I was able to, you know, find 300 pictures that I could use, right? Just basically all as you give the credit, you know, which is a tremendous thing to have, you know. Because I mean, I wanted to make sure the book was illustrated, like, completely, you know. Because now people, like, unfortunately, people don't read as much as they used to, So, and when you do read, it's important to be visual because everyone's used to reading blogs or just being on the internet, you know?
Yeah.
So I needed to add as many pictures as I could. And when I turned it in, you know, it was a test for me as well to see what they were going to come back with. Like, how are they going to react to, you know, all these pictures? And, you know, the color, they have, like, what, 16 or 15 page color spread or something. I mean, when I saw the book, I was blown away. They did a fantastic job.
The cover itself is just, it's spellbinding. It is so beautiful. And, you know, I got to say, like you said, too, with divine timing, this is really the time for this information to come through. And as
exactly.
We're peeling back the layers and we're exposing all these aspects, we need people like you to come forward and speak about it and write about it, because this is the stuff that, you know, what I want to say is, when I picked up the book, I could feel the truth resonating out of it. And so many people will be attracted because of that, not because of what it looks like or, you know, or, oh, great, another book. No, it's the vibe the book gives off. It is so powerful that people who are in tune are definitely going to pick it up. And it's time, because they're clearly on that point where they're questioning and they're looking into and wanting to know more about this exact topic. And
thank you. And I've been getting amazing feedback, and it's blowing my mind, actually, the response I've gotten. And, you know, and for me, like, what was important, you know, obviously, you know, has to be well written and has to be good. You know, if you expect somebody to buy it, it has to be worth them buying it, right? But to me, it was, had to be fresh, you know, because this is something I love. And obviously, I've read a whole bunch of books on this topic. So for me, it was important not to just totally, like, be on Zachariah Sitchin's coattails or any, or, you know, like...
Well, it felt like you channeled it, because the way
like,
it was written,
it
felt like you were tuning in definitely to something. And the way the words, everything, the way you brought it forward, I mean, even too, especially like when it's talking about the Hathors, that just, it blew me away. And how much it was resounding truth within my own structure, my own physical body. As you know, our bodies are also the temples, and we're the invisible temples. So when we walk into a sacred site, you get activated. And that's what your book did. So it's going to really cause a roar across the world. So... So what I'd love to ask you more, and I love this pharaoh. I always wanted to know more about this pharaoh, and I could never say his name properly, so we apologize to the pharaoh. Akhenaten.
Akhenaten.
Incredible. The information you got on him, and... I would love to bring some more of that forward, too, because there's some, or unless you want to hold some of the secrets back, but, you know.
Well, I mean, I'm not that type of dude. If I find everything out there to find, it's my responsibility to be able to translate to the masses. So, but to me, it's a treasure hunt as well. So, you know, that's my favorite part of the whole book, is about Akhenaten and how... the story of Akhenaten, and how I kind of feel personally that I was able to finally tell it correctly.
Yes.
Because this is one of the most misunderstood peoples in history, you know? So for me to sort of humanize this amazing, mysterious figure, to me it was rewarding. It was a challenge, you know? It was crazy. I don't know if you're into Michael Tesserian. He's a good friend of mine, but amazing researcher. You know, he wrote about Akhenaten, but he didn't write about it the way he missed it as well. You know, like, there's some guy I completely admire, but he didn't get it correct either. You know, so for me to tackle this and to...
What I thought was interesting that you brought up about him, and I was also looking for it when I was reading the book, was that I have also read in a few places that he had had something like 300 people that had also ascended that he had taught as well, all the knowledge and the ancient scriptures and everything. I thought was amazing. I don't know if you heard that.
Yeah, well, I think that comes from the keys of Thoth. Those like the teachings are like the
Svenok. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. And, so definitely, that's definitely possible. This guy was, first of all, he was, you know, he was like Justin Bieber in a way. Like he was a child celebrity. You know, he grew up within the culture. You know, he was exposed, like his great grandfather had a UFO encounter. And which is written about on the walls of Karnak. So it really happened. You know, governments have been going crazy trying to find Tutali papyrus and, you know, figure out, like, what, you know, if they can make this claim as fake or as real or not. But it's there on the walls. So he,
yes.
You know, his lineage is already there. Like, he was going to be Pharaoh no matter what. And he's going to be Pharaoh in one of the most progressive, incredible times in Egyptian history, you know? So being an insider and being exposed to the Amun priesthood and the Shemsu Hor and all that was going around him, for him to have grown up into that, but then somehow make a conscious decision to realize, like, something's wrong. You know, this is not the indigenous teachings, this is not the way it's supposed to be. This whole system is a fraud, you know? And
yeah.
For him to, like, make that decision and then act upon it and literally put the bankers out of business, you know, like Jesus did, to really, you know, destroy, like, their little world that they thought was, uncorruptible and unchangeable, for this one man to have pulled that off. And it's, you know, like, who is this guy?
Yeah, it's, you know, amazing, because it shows how one person can truly affect the entire fabric of reality. And what I thought was amazing, that I really loved that you did in the book, was how you decrypted passages from the Bible as alien visitation. I thought that was, it just blew my mind. And I thought, well, of course, it totally makes sense. It just, like, all the pieces fell into place. And for those of you listening in and hearing about this, again, we're speaking with Xavier Hayes, who wrote the incredible book, Aliens in Ancient Egypt. You've got to get out and read this book. It's so unbelievable. And what blew me away, too, was about the conspiracy of how far back the Illuminati goes and why they have the symbols. I mean, that just blew my mind. So it was something I always questioned myself, too, but to see, to, in essence, finally have sort of like an answer of where it actually originated from. And for, again, for those listening in, when Xavier is speaking about the brotherhoods and the Amun priesthood, am I correct in saying that that is the origin of where it comes from?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely where it comes from. There's no coincidence why all these symbols go back to ancient Egypt. And you know, even with the space program, like, why on earth are they choosing these names and these ancient Egyptian symbols? And, you know, and then not to mention DARPA and the patches, you know, like these secret programs that they had to get a FOI request just to get these patches released. And these patches have, like, gray aliens on them and just unbelievable, crazy stuff. And these are actually covert groups within, you know, black ops within the government. I mean, what is going on?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Well, we say too now, the government is nothing more than a corporation, right? There's no more government, so.
Yes, in the words of the immortal Gordon Gekko, you know, that other malfunctioning corporation, the USA.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible, and it really makes you think and stand back, and also realize too, like, as the reflection of what's happening throughout the universe, how can you heal that within yourself? And I have something interesting to say to you that is sort of kind of off topic, but it comes in from one of the things that I myself do, because I've learned how to do holographic travel and bilocate. And I've been doing it, and I've been doing an event that I do every New Year's Eve for the last 4 or 5 years, where we do a holographic journey, and we do it worldwide with people where we link up with our souls, and then we travel to the Sphinx. But and it's always just a mind-blowing experience. But this time around, in the last 2 years, I was doing a holographic journey with a friend of mine. You probably know her too, Danielle Roma Hoffman. When she had gone to Egypt, and she took my picture, and what she did was she'd open up a vortex and put my picture in it and then send the energies back. And the information that I got, what blew my mind the most was in Abydos. There was some mind-blowing stuff that happened there. And what really got me was, I mean, I'd see Osiris's head floating around, and all of a sudden I was like, what the hell is going on? I was getting a little freaked out. But it's really opened me up to a totally new dimension. And of course, I'm doing it myself. And whenever we're going on different journeys and stuff, we're also offering this. But the key is that it really works. And the information that comes forward is what I want to pull through is how you also wrote about Abydos in the book. And I thought, my God, especially with all the satellite imaging now that they can see and that they've found something in or near that area,
yeah,
it totally resonates because I felt it.
And yeah, that's the original area.
And, it's got to be bigger. Has to be.
There's so much there that if they were ever to, one, get it up, and two, like, present it to us, it would be game over for all the lies they've been telling us for thousands of years. I mean, the key to Egypt is it's always... As long as the landmass, the earth, is the position where they are, and this is, it's probably been this way for a long, long, long time. That Egypt has always been important because of the location. So there's always been a pyramid field. There's always been like an earth vortex. It's always been a beacon for extraterrestrial civilizations or visitors. And so that's why it's important, because the history is there, and the energy is phenomenal. I mean, it's ancient. So, you know, this is the reason why people who are kind of in tune and who are searching for these things, why they are drawn there. It's like a honing mechanism, you know?
Well, I have to say, too, I did hear your interview with Rita Louise, but Dr. Rita Louise. what blew my mind was that she had asked you if you'd been to Egypt. And I totally thought you had been. Well, clearly, in a past life, you have.
Oh, for sure. I was Pharaoh.
Mars,
too, so I don't know that.
But for you to write this book in this life, in this dimension, at this time, at the space where we're stepping back into the golden age, is brilliant. And I can only imagine what's going to come out of you when you actually go to Egypt yourself.
Oh, I know. I'm going to be levitating. I'm going to be floating. It's weird because this whole thing is strange, you know, and it's kind of like, damn, I wrote a book about Egypt, but I haven't really been there yet. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah, not like, this life. I love that question.
I have to validate like what the hell I'm talking about, you know,
not but
the day I was supposed to like literally, the next morning, basically, we're going to the airport to fly to Egypt, of course. The revolution happened, literally. Like, we're getting ready to go, and then that night, the next morning, whatever it was, like, it was happening. And then they were like, oh, you know, we're going to have to delay it and this and that. And then we're supposed to go again, like, maybe a year later or something else happened. So now we're supposed to hopefully get there in April or May. Definitely this year is the year, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, knock on wood. But,
and
yeah, it's a weird
too,
thing. I'm supposed to be there when I'm supposed to be there, I guess. You know, it's
yeah, for sure. And the beauty of it is that this year is the year of the sovereign self. I mean, for New Year's Day to start on a new moon in Capricorn, Capricorn's sign has all the signs have shifted. They've all gone to their highest expression now. And with also... which is in the Capricorn state is about being the inner guru and about the sovereign self. So for that kind of an activation on the beginning of the year, and then this coming through for you, it's time. It's definitely time. So thank you.
What does that mean for Libra? for Libras.
Oh, well, you're still no, you're still messed up. it's actually anchoring and bringing all that mental information from those realms into the physical. So it's making it a reality, embracing. But also, too, it's interesting. If you say you are a Libra, then
yes,
it would also have to do, too, with because it is the balancing of the scales, the justice, you're bringing that. And Libra itself is bringing the balance or reclaiming the balance for the universal soul.
Wow.
So
I know it's a big year for me because I've been working on this draft for about, I wrote a script about Errol Flynn.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And I've been working on it for, you know, 8 or 9 years, maybe 10. And finally now, just because we're trying to get Orlando Bloom involved. You know, obviously Hollywood's money, right? It's, you know, no one would know is one thing, but having the money to like make the call is a whole other, whole other difference. But I find like a good friend of mine, he's working on a project with the guy who did Burn Notice, one of the producers.
Matt Mix, he's really amazing.
And he took my draft, and he was able to give me like the notes I needed to make it, you know. To make it good, finally, you know. So, and so basically, on Christmas Eve, all that—that's what I was doing, was writing, like trying to get this draft. Because I have another producer in Australia who I met just by chance, but there's no such thing as chance, obviously. so you know, I think it's the year that's finally gonna break through with that. There's gonna be something because this good, you know, like the whole the story there has merit and it's good and it's. I can feel it, and I have other stuff like the Elvis, and I don't know if you've been on my blog. I wrote a whole blog post about the Elvis fake his own death, and it got
crazy
attention. I had to do like 5 radio shows and just from my blog post, you know. so that book got sold by David Hatcher Childress. He has a publishing company,
mm-hmm.
So he picked it up. But we haven't really finalized the deal, but I need to finish writing it first. You know, so I've been kind of working on that as well. So there's a lot of stuff going on, you know.
Sounds like you are the man of truth and bringing forward. I mean, judging even just by this book, if you're going to write anything on those topics the way you did this, wow.
Yeah, well, that's my whole thing. Even my first book, if you try to get about the suppressed history of America, it was mostly about Meriwether Lewis and the fact that he was murdered, you know. So the famous explorer from Lewis and Clark, so. Everything that I try to do, and I wrote a biography on Thin Lizzy, a famous rock group, you know, from Ireland. So I think when I do a nonfiction work, it's definitely about the truth. It's definitely about righting the wrongs and it has to have merit. You understand? Like, there's no, you know, there has to be something, which is the way it should be, right? I mean, you're going to write nonfiction. You know,
yeah.
I want to write novels too, and I have some, but it's totally different beast, you know.
It's so wild. As you're talking, I just get this vision of you as a scribe in the Hall of Amentes with this big feathered pen just writing. So I wonder if that must have been part of your past life. No wonder you would have such access to truth, right? So.
Yeah, I'm an ancient soul for sure. I've been around for millions of years. I know this to be true. But, you know, it's interesting when you brought up the fact that the biblical passages, seeing them has, like, understanding, like, what we know of technology,
mm-hmm.
And interpreting that as having alien encounters.
Yeah, that is
mind-blowing. I took a little in the book, a little about the Ramayana and some of the Hindu and Indian texts.
Mm-hmm.
Very... You know, Battlestar Galactica. Like, if anyone is listening and has not seen the Battlestar Galactica series, like the remake, you know, the one that was on the Sci-Fi Channel,
mm-hmm.
they should watch it because the whole history is there.
I was just thinking about Sheldon Cooper from The Big Bang, always going on about Battlestar Galactica.
Because it's the truth. I mean, that's the most hardcore, amazing, this philosophical. Everything's there. Like. Everything. It's so deep. It's unbelievable. Like, Yeah, you just got to see it, and it's just one of those things like, wow, that's insane. But so then, you know, then also we have the Egyptian, which no one had ever done before. No one had ever took the Egyptian writings and made those to relate to alien encounters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many. It blew my mind, like, reading that stuff and being able to say, like, okay, maybe they're talking about this and that. And also what was very interesting about that was the whole episode of the cargo cult, right, which is a phenomenon that came out during World War II in the South Pacific Islands. There's an African-American fighter pilot named John Frum, who crashed land in one of the islands in the South Pacific, and he survived. The Aborigines there, they, he gave him food, and then he was rescued, right? And
wow.
So they made this whole cult based on John Frum, like a sky god. They recreated the runway. They recreated the plane out of bamboo, out of like straw and bamboo, and they created they're doing like little radio. And so this whole cult sprung up from this encounter, right? And it's just, so if that happened in the 40s, obviously it's the same type of mental concept that would have happened back in the day as well. So that we even have that sort of incident, we could relate to this and say, well, okay, this happened in the 40s, so, back thousands of years ago when UFOs are flying around, they would have had the same type of response, right? Like, what is that? Trying to figure it out.
It's so true. And that's such a phenomenal example. I mean, even too, like with India, they write about that stuff all the time. So,
yeah,
it's it's all out in the open. It's not, they don't hide it. So, but I mean, we could get into so many other aspects of that. What do you do for your free time?
Oh, free time. Let's see here.
I sleep.
Yeah, I go to the spa. I work out / hang out in the steam room, and that's my mortal fear is not having enough time to write all the stuff I need to write, basically. So, I live in fear of, one, not writing the Great American Novel, which I have to do. I don't think I'll have. Obviously, because there's so much nonfiction stuff I have to get out because, it's there. And it's just, once you're, you got one book out and you got two and then three, and you just kind of have to ride that train and take advantage of it.
Yeah.
So the ideas I have for those, I'm pumping them out and they're coming out. But then I'm also involved in television stuff as well and film and I want to, a novel. I really, really want to write novels. Like, seriously. Cannot wait to the day where I'm in a position where I could just kind of write some novels and just kind of focus on that for, at least a year or whatever. So, there's not enough time in the day for me, and the key to being a writer, if you're an artist, you're an artist, right? Like, as a child who you are.
Of course.
And as long as you have depends on your upbringing, your role models and your environment, if it's fostered correctly, that's a whole other thing. For me, thankfully, I've been blessed and been very lucky and fortunate to been able to kind of just stay on this path that has a creative individual. So, that's one thing. But to find the time to actually write. See, if people don't understand that it's not the writing that's hard. Because it is hard, obviously, but mm-hmm. You have editors and you have people to make it good. Mm-hmm. What's hard is the discipline. This is the one key thing I tell anybody who's interested, because I talk to college students, and anyone. It doesn't matter how old you are. You could be I was at the grocery store and had a fabulous conversation with an old Jewish lady, and she had written some stuff and she stopped and. It's the discipline. You have to set goals, and you have to discipline yourself to be like, no matter what, I'm going to write 1 hour a day or 2 hours, or I'm going to write from you know, 6 a.m. to 8, or whatever it is, right? You set the little, keep a journal, like you keep a food diary or whatever, you keep a writing diary, and you set the clock, and that way you know, because once you start doing that and it becomes habit, then you're good.
Then and if I may, I just want to say
really important
that
to actually have,
if you think of it like the seasons, the seasons look like they go slow, but everything always gets done. So if you allow yourself to sort of step into that type of a mind frame, then you're going to get it all done anyway. So.
Yeah, exactly. The time is not going backwards. Like we are traveling through space on a planet, you know, spinning around. You can't even tell. And we are not going backwards. So it's the mind, man. It's your mental, you know, it's just like drugs or alcohol or whatever, right? I mean, it's your personal battle in with your mind, with, you know, are you going to let those things destroy you or rule your life, or are you going to, you know, rule your own creation? Because I believe in, like, the power, you know, like the secret, the type of, like, we evolve in a vibrational frequency, right? Everything is vibration. So
absolutely.
The universe responds to what you give out. So you need to put out love, and you need to put out, like, this is getting done today, I'm doing this, and this is what I want, and it will come. Like,
you're the cool creator of your
universe.
It will
come.
Xavier, you've been amazing, and thank you so much. For those of you listening in, we have Xavier Hayes, who's written the book Aliens in Ancient Egypt, and his website, you can find out more about all the fascinating stuff that he does, is at xavientvision.com. And, of course, we're going to have all this information up on the website, too, so that you can click through and find out more about them. And, Xavient, do you have a few minutes to stay with us as we bring on our travel guru? Who is,
okay.
I think she has a fascinating destination that kind of goes with what we're doing today. So
I'm interested.
All right. Well, let's bring her in. Peta Panos from SpiritualQuestJourneys.com. Are you with us, Peta? Aloha.
Aloha. Hi, Charlotte. Hi, Xavient. I must tell you that I do have your book on order, and I'm so looking forward to reading it.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. I was listening to what you were saying about the fact that you've tried to go to Egypt a couple of times, and it never kind of happened. And, you know, Egypt is one of those destinations that you really have to be in the exact right time for it to all happen. I think I tried about 10 times, and every single time the trip was cancelled. And then finally I got there twice in 2012. And it is going to blow your mind. It's the most incredible destination.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I think you're going to have a wonderful time.
I have to be back on the show after you get back from there so you can tell us about your experience.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, Charlotte, today I'm going to be putting the spotlight on the sacred sites and crop circle formations in southern England. And I'm always so excited to talk about this because I find the area completely magical. Over the years that I have visited the area, every single time I've gone there, something seriously amazing has happened. And in actual fact, I was in a crop circle when I got the very clear message to actually open Spiritual Quest Journey. So it's one of my most favorite tours, and just so I'm so happy to be sharing it with all of you.
Oh, yay. And I love the fact, too, like with the crop circles and the hieroglyphs, how it really goes together with today's show. That's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe your next book is Aliens and Crop Circle Formations. So the tour that we've got coming up, it's a 10-day tour, and it runs from the 20th to the 29th of July next year. And it really is an in-depth look at the sacred sites in the area, as well as, of course, the crop circles. And this year, we've timed it so that it overlaps with the annual crop circle conference at the end of the tour, which is brilliant. So there you have international presenters coming from all over the world, sharing the latest research and experiences and, you know, people's opinion about the crop circles themselves. And, of course, there are some related topics as well. So that's going to be, I think, a great bonus for people joining us this year. The sacred sites themselves in the area are incredibly well known. Of course, it starts with the world famous Stonehenge, which is close to Salisbury. And on the tour, we actually put a private group access to go into the stones themselves at sunrise. Now, for those of you that have been to Stonehenge, you'll know that when you visit it on a private basis, you have a boundary around the stones. So you can get fairly close, but you aren't able to touch the stones or actually sit in the circle and meditate or what have you. So we always have a private group access at sunrise, which allows the group to literally go in amongst the stones. You can touch them and sit near them, and we do a magnificent release ceremony in the stones themselves. So that's really wonderful. And then close by, you have Avebury, which of course is the heart center of megalithic Britain. It's the largest stone circle of the world. And here you can see the remains of the two former stone circles. One is solar and one is lunar. And you can actually learn how to douse for the earth energy here. It's a perfect place because you've got really strong energy, earth energy currents there. You've got the Mary and the Michael ley lines running through the area. So all of the sacred sites in the area actually center around Avebury, and that includes Stonehenge itself, and that's over 20 miles away. So it's thought that this Avebury circle really is the center of it all. And I find it's actually incredible to fly over Avebury because that's the only way you get a true understanding of how large the circle is and, you know, seeing all the different parts to it. Of course, we offer a helicopter flip on the tour, which is optional for those that want to do it, but it's really worthwhile because not only do you fly over Avebury, but also Stonehenge and any crop circle formations in the area, and they're so big that you can really only get a true sense of what they look like and the design and the sacred geometry of the design when you look at it from the air. So it's always worthwhile doing that. Close by, like literally right there, is Silbury Hill, which is a prehistoric man-made mount over 120 feet high. And then across the road from that, you have West Kennet Longborough on the opposite side of the road. And this is an underground chamber and was used as a tomb and a place of initiation. There are also incredible acoustics here. So we actually do a drumming ceremony here. And just to go back to Silbury Hill for a sec, in the days gone by when you were actually able to go up to the top of Silbury Hill, what I always found fascinating is that everybody's camera batteries and cell phone batteries would literally discharge as soon as they came in close proximity to Silbury Hill. So it is a really interesting place. Over the years, they've done quite a lot of work, and you're no longer allowed up Silbury Hill because it started collapsing, but you get close enough to it and certainly can feel the energy of it. So that's quite a mysterious place and quite a highlight. And then about an hour's drive away is the mystical town of Glastonbury. And of course, it's steeped in legends about Jesus and King Arthur. And it's also known as the Isle of Avalon. So if you are interested in the King Arthur legends and what have you, then this is definitely a place to go. The town itself is relatively small, but it's filled with fantastic esoteric shops. And this is where the Glastonbury Abbey is. Of course, you get the beautiful gardens of Chalice Well here, and you're actually welcome to drink the healing waters from the holy wellhead itself. And a local legend or local rumor or legend is that the Holy Grail itself is actually hidden in the wellhead. Very close to Chalice Well, you can actually see it, see Glastonbury Tor from Chalice Well. Is the tour itself, and you're welcome to walk up it, and you have St. Michael's Tower up at the top. So quite a prominent ley line energy place of power, and an incredible place to see the amazing view from the top of Glastonbury Tor. Now, I don't think that there are too many people out there that haven't heard about crop circles, but in case you haven't yet, crop circles are huge formations that contain sacred geometry, and they generally appear mysteriously in the space of literally a couple of hours, so normally during the night, and still are very much an unexplained mystery. Of course, there have been many claims that all of the crop circles are man-made and hoaxes, and I fully support that some of the formations definitely are, but there is enough scientific evidence and information around the formations that it's clear that there is definitely something unexplained. Now, there have been over 10,000 formations recorded in 29 countries around the world. In fact, there was one recently around New Year in California. But 90% of them actually appear in this Wiltshire area within the 10-15 mile radius from Avebury. And of course, because there's so many in the July, kind of June, July, August crop circle season, of course, it is the area that gets researched the most. So there are many ways of, many thought processes around knowing whether a crop circle formation is authentic or not. And the scientific evidence shows that in the authentic ones, the cellular structure, soil chemistry, and electromagnetic field has definitely been altered. To me, you can generally see the lay of it. And the clue often is that in the authentic crop circles, you'll actually see that the nodes have been blown. The other thing that I think is really compelling is that when you fly over the crop circles, you often see a ghost formation, which is a formation that was in a field the year before. And you can very clearly see the design of the formation, but there isn't a crop circle in that field. Now, if it was man-made, I don't believe that you would be able to see it a year later in a field of full crops.
Wow. I wonder how much of that happens in Egypt as well. Holy cow.
Absolutely. So in terms of the crop circles, I think they are incredible. There are so many reports of miracles and instant healings from people that have been in them. They're also stories of unexplained lights. And I've heard these firsthand. In fact, I've seen some private videos of balls of light around the fields. And even stories of the pilots flying over the fields at sunrise and then literally coming back 2 or 3 hours later and seeing a fully formed huge crop circle, that in a field that was completely empty before. So whatever you choose to believe, one thing is definitely for certain. The longer you look into the world of crop circles, the more you realize that there really is an unexplained mystery here. And having been to the area so many times and having personally experienced so many crop circles, it is an incredibly exciting area to visit. And it has a degree of a real spiritual quest. Being in the area, hearing about a formation that's come down, being one of the first to be there, and actually experiencing the energy of the circle firsthand.
Wow.
So back to the tour. The hotel we use is based in Devizes, which is brilliant because you're there for the full 10-day period. And the hotel is right in the center of town, so very close to all the shops and restaurants and even the market. And this is actually where the annual conference is held as well. So it's kind of within walking distance of the hotel. So it's a very easy 10-day experience. You get to literally immerse yourself in the area, experience the sacred sites for yourself, and hopefully a couple of crop circles firsthand. So for more information on the upcoming journey, it's on the 20th to the 29th of July, 2014. And check out spiritualquestjourneys.com for more information. And remember that when you invest in spiritual travel, you always get back richer.
Thank you so much, Peter. That was so fascinating. always been drawn to the crop circles after the hieroglyphs. But
yeah, absolutely. But it's, you know, if you have an interest in one, you probably have an interest in the other, because it's the unexplained mystery that draws one in.
Well, then we have to go to Peru after that so we can see all those designs from the sky as well, too.
Yeah, the Aztec lines. Absolutely.
Yeah, the name escapes me. Have you been to England yet, Xavier?
To Peru?
Either, yeah.
No, I haven't. We have friends there. I'm supposed to go there as well. We'll probably actually go there before Egypt is closer to Miami.
Who knows what's going to happen in the spring, right?
Yeah, who knows. But I'm very fascinated with crop circles. I would love to, like, walk into one after, like, a freshly made one. That'd be insane.
It's so exciting. The one we went into, we were at the Silent Circle, which is a crappie hangout. Uh-huh. And we heard that it had come down, and literally all we had were the GPS coordinates, and we rushed off, and we had no idea what it looked like because there was no aerial photograph yet. And with about 20 other crappies, we climbed over fences, and fortunately the farmer was very happy for us to go into his field. And it was the most amazing experience to literally be amongst the first 10 people in the circle, you know. Wow. And the energy is just insane. It's wonderful.
That's cool.
So incredible. Thank
have you. Have you anyone, I've been to Pompeii. Has anyone, you guys been to Pompeii?
Not in this life.
Not in this life.
Well, that's a place that requires no magic mushrooms. I mean, it's insane.
They should list that on the tour.
No magic mushrooms needed.
Seriously, it was like, whoa.
Movie coming out about it too, which is interesting. I mean, it's in the spring. It's all, they're doing it all 3D, but that is one of the most fascinating stories of all, and you must have had your mind completely blown there too.
Oh yeah, it's so mind-blowing. And then it's funny because during one, you know, because they have the famous murals, right, the walls, and I was staring at one, and I noticed that some of it had came off, I kind of touched the wall in a little tiny chunk about the size of my, like, my thumb, like the size of my thumbnail kind of fell into my hand, and I just put it in my pocket. So I totally have a piece of the wall from Pompeii in my private collection.
Wow, I would love to feel what that vibration is, what kind of messages you get off of that.
Yeah, I totally want to do, like, some sort of, you know, psychic type, you know, get together with some mediums and kind of just see how it goes, because it's powerful. It's powerful, as you can imagine.
I'm into that. I have many of my friends, when they travel the world and they go to different spaces that I haven't been to yet, I always ask them to bring me back a rock, because then I can download the information or the frequency or the cosmic key codes. And so I actually have a piece now from the Bosnian pyramids, and also from Egypt, and a couple spots from South Africa. But it's unbelievable when you feel that energy. I even had one where one of my friends came back, and I had the Great Pyramid in my right hand, the second pyramid in my left, and the little one on top of my head. And whoa, the energy shift that I experienced, holy cow, it took him almost 2 hours to bring me back. It was pretty awesome. But that's another story. Thank you so much, both of you. Xavier, thank you very much for being on the show. Once again, Aliens in Ancient Egypt, you got to get this book. It'll just blow your mind, and you probably don't need mushrooms to read this one either. So
not required. Blow you
into another dimension. It's so great. And
a little air would be all right.
Can you imagine if you did? They could get some interesting reviews after that. And you can find out more about Xavian at xavianvision.com. And of course, our lovely travel guru, Peter Panos from Spiritual Quest Journeys. Thank you all so much for joining us and for such a fabulous show. And we'll definitely have to bring you back after you go to Egypt and let us know what you've experienced, Xavier. And all the best. Thank you very much. Wishing you all magical days. And, you know, of course, we can't forget the nights. In divine ecstasy. Aloha. No, we were just waiting for you to finish it.
It sounds to me like you guys have just